Hi, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Kyle Woody understands the sacrifice and emotional challenges of being forced to step up as a primary caregiver for a loved one experiencing a health crisis. As the primary caregiver to his late wife who died from cancer, he experienced firsthand the unique challenges that arise due to the way societal norms affect how men think and feel about being a caregiver. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Woody discusses his inspiration for starting Jack's Caregiver Coalition, a nonprofit organization designed to support men through the caregiving journey, and why that's so important.
I wanted to talk with you more generally about the role of the male caregiver with cancer patients today. But before we start with that, I wanted to ask, tell me a little bit about Jack's Caregiver Coalition. What is this organization and what is its mission?
Yeah, so I'll start with the mission. The mission is to improve the way that guys think, feel, and act through every phase of their caregiving journey. And the organization itself came into existence, you know, through my personal experience with caring for my spouse with metastatic colon cancer. And, you know, about a year into our journey, we had some friends that wanted to come help us. They wanted to come hang out with us for a week, and we were excited to have them over. And at the dinner table that first night, we were sharing our plans for them. I had planned a week's worth of stuff for them to do, and they said, well, that's nice, but we're not here for that. We're here to serve you. And Don, they were looking at me when they said that, and I was perplexed. I, you know, said, well, I don't need you to serve me. I'm fine. She's the one who has cancer. You know, that's who you should be serving. And they went on to explain that before they had come, they had consulted a dear friend of theirs who had been in the same situation and asked him, you know, how do we help this family? You know, we really want to make an impact. We don't want to be a burden. They had the wisdom to realize that just visiting is more people to care for. And his name was Jack, and he's the namesake of the organization. He told them, serve the caregiver. They're always forgotten. And so that's what they were there to do, was, you know, bring his wisdom to life in my life. And so that moment is the way I like to think about our organization as being our genesis moment, and it inspired me after a lot of reflection and writing and being inspired by what they did to find other people in the same situation and figure out what service looks like for them. And so that's, you know, 2014 is when we were founded with the help of two other founders. And our mission has, you know, over the years just continued to become clearer and more real. And what we do changes over time, and to some extent is unique for each caregiver that we encounter. But it goes back to that dinner table moment of, you know, we're here to serve you. And we feel like we have, I think, a model of community care that's more effective than what we see a lot of in the world, which is self, you know, caregivers being told, take care of yourself. And while that's true, you do need to take care of yourself. We think caregivers need more than that. We think they need to be taken care of. And so that's what we strive to do.
That's wonderful. I want to talk a little bit about the general issue of male caregivers, and you obviously are coming to this topic from personal experience, but also in your capacity through Jack's Caregiving Coalition. So I'm enthusiastic about your insight. I'd like to begin, Kyle, by asking you if you had any information on the percentage of caregivers today who are male, and talking primarily for cancer patients, obviously, since this is our readership. But I was wondering if you had any insight as to percentages or numbers today versus, say, a couple decades ago.
You know, I've read a lot of studies, and I've seen a lot of reports and things. I certainly haven't read or seen them all. But I just have kind of a suspicion, a strong suspicion, I'll call it, that it's really just right around, you know, between 45% and 50%. Whereas, you know, to your point, 30 years ago, that was a much smaller number. There's a variety of forces at play there. And, you know, it's important, I think, to anchor yourself, you know, in what you mean when you say caregiver, to really figure that out. And every report kind of anchors itself differently. I'm thinking the number's bigger because the way we define it is anyone taking responsibility for a loved one. And so responsibility to us is, you know, you're not necessarily doing the tactical things that the word caregiver connotes. It might be that you're just making sure they're getting done. And so you're taking responsibility for all their needs, you know, the emotional support, the financial support, the healthcare, you know, all of it. And so I think when you look at it through that lens, you can surely appreciate that number is larger than people think, because especially in a spousal situation, you know, there's a lot of people being cared for by that are in a spousal relationship with a male. That makes sense.
It does, very much so. Kyle, would you say the social mindset regarding male caregivers has changed significantly in recent years? Are you seeing that personally?
You know, if I reflect on my life before Jax and before they came to the table and said, hey, we're here to serve you, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't know what a caregiver was, right? No one had ever called me that. And so, you know, back then I would say, I had absolutely no connection to that identity, no appreciation for, you know, even my own mother, how much emotional and physical labor she put into raising me. I can, although I try to stay off social media and things, I know the stuff I have seen, it generally is connected to a female gender. And if there's imagery around it, it's generally an older person's hand being held by a younger person's hand, who they appear to be female hands. You know, so I think all that stuff matters. You know, it paints a picture that we just have in our minds. And even in the movies, you know, when, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Meet the Fockers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
The nurse moment, you know, he's a male nurse, and everybody just thinks that's hilarious that he's a male nurse. And, you know, like that stuff, it does shape you and you're unaware of it.
And yeah, you're right, that does shape social attitudes on a lot of things. I'm really glad you brought that up, Kyle, because that was a point I hadn't really considered, is how society views male caregivers and male nurses, etc. So I appreciate that. Let me ask you, though, from your experience, what do you attribute the growing percentage of men as caregivers in the United States? Necessity?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a lot of things. You know, I think that's the trouble we get into with trying to figure anything out, is we're looking for one silver bullet, and the reality is there's 100 of them. And I think, you know, you're right. It is necessity to the extent that, you know, we've read about the silver tsunami. I've heard it called, with the generation of boomers that are, you know, unable to work or experiencing health crises. But then there's maybe the less obvious stuff that, you know, people like me have had, people like my friends say to me, hey, you're a caregiver. You know, like what you're doing is really hard and super important, and we want to help you. And whereas my father or his dad, I don't think that ever happened. I could be wrong. It just wasn't the culture. It was so strict that, you know, women work in the house and men work out in the world. And, you know, I don't know why that was, but it isn't that way anymore. Things are shifting to, you know, a home environment where, I mean, in the house I live in now, we have 5 kids, and my wife and I we share and shoulder 50% of the household work each, and we both bring in about 50% of the income. And, you know, we're trying to, I, as a father of my sons, or I want to model what dad doing the dishes looks like. And that wasn't the model that I ever had growing up.
Sure.
You know, I had a different model, and we as kids just want to make our parents proud. So I think these are really strong, invisible forces that take time. So us in this, maybe if we want to lump people into categories, the Generation Xers and Millennials, who are starting to shift that traditional model of, you know, what it looks like to be to do the emotional household work and, you know, to be the person who the teacher calls. You know, they used to always call mom. And it was, I think it, her name just escaped me, but the Supreme Court Justice, RBG, she was reading some of her stuff and they were calling her, you know, when she was out of law school. And she's like, you know, I have a husband. You can call him. And so that was, I think, where it started, right? With people like her having the courage to say, hey, I can't do all of this. So I could go on and on, but.
It's true. Kyle, you were a caregiver for your wife. Is that correct? When she had her cancer experience?
Yes.
What was the time period of that? When approximately years did you do that?
So she was diagnosed in November of 2011, and then she passed away in July of 2020.
I see. I'm sorry. Did she pass away from the cancer?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Kyle. I truly am. I'd like to talk a little bit about how a man's experience as a caregiver for a loved one is different from a woman's experience. Can you offer some insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I can. I can offer my own experience, but I do think we have to be careful with the stereotypes. And, you know, I've met, you know, while I'm going to tell you kind of a stereotypical story, I think there are just as many non-stereotypical stories, and like people who are female who struggle in the exact same ways that guys do. And conversely, there are guys who don't, you know, that are completely equipped to talk about their feelings and reach out and do all the traditionally feminine things. And I've met all of these types of people. But I think stereotypically the guys who were raised like I was, you know, with a strong father in a household that, you know, this rugged individualism is the story, you know, the narrative, you know, the thing we're all striving for, to be independent and not in need of any help or support. I think that a lot of guys are in that framework of, you know, moving through the world. And then when they're hit with this caregiving chessboard, so to speak, being wiped clean, they don't have the tools they need to move through it effectively. And I want to make sure I'm answering your question is how it's maybe harder.
Yes, exactly. Yes, sir. Exactly.
Yeah. I think, you know, in a nutshell, kind of guys tend to do it on their alone. There was a report by AARP put out in 2017 featuring the issue of male caregivers, and it was discovered that 78% of caregivers that were guys that they interviewed had no help. There was no one else like helping. At least that was the caregiver's perception, right? And so, you know, that's really unfortunate because it tends to be, I think, the female approach to when they encounter adversity to reach out and, you know, surrender and sort of say to their friends and their community, like, I don't know how to navigate this. I need your help. I need your support, you know, and that's what works. That's what works. And so, you know, my own experience was just that, not asking. I'd never asked anyone for help. Of course, everyone was asking me, how could they help? Which was hard because to me, that's a sign of weakness that I even need it. And so I think that that's really the single biggest challenge that I hear over, you know, there are a dozen and a half challenges that every caregiver faces, but the one that I hear over and over and over again that it never really gets easy. And I can speak from experience of doing it for 9 years. You know, even though I learned, like, hey, asking for help, even insisting on help, challenging people, being a leader in that way, letting other people be the magic. Even though I know that to be the most effective and the best way to go about it, I still would revert back to my old habit of going at it alone, you know, trying to be the magic in every situation. And you know, so it's knowing is not enough, I guess, but that's, you have to continually practice the exercise of being vulnerable and
allowing other people into the mess.
Who did you turn to, Kyle, when you finally made that realization that you didn't have to do this on your own? Who did you finally turn to for help?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that, you know, the creation of the organization was my way, and not that I created it, but, you know, I and others, I thought of it as me doing these people a favor, you know, like, hey, I'm helping Justin, you know, with his journey. But in reality, what that was me asking for help from him in a guy way. Like, I just needed community. I needed people that understood my situation in my life. That's what I needed. You know, I'm a privileged white male who, you know, was able to work wherever I wanted and, you know, was able to have a lot of luxuries that non-privileged, you know, non-male, non-white people don't have. You know, everybody's needs are unique. Mine was, I just needed people in my life that I could talk to, that, you know, I could feel less alone with. And so, well, it, you know, at the time I thought of it as, not only do I not need help, but I'm helping other people. The reality was me needing help in my weird way of going about getting it. The community that I needed didn't exist, so me and some friends created it. Or at least for us, it didn't exist. I think for some people, it does. They have that community in their church. They have that community in their neighborhood, or they have it in their office environment. You know, I'm not just suggesting that no one has it but us, but that's who I went to, was that community. And while, yeah, I might have been in the beginning showing up to help them, it's like any relationship with a mentor, or reverse mentorship always happens. And so I got just as much or more out of it than I put into it.
Kyle, I wanted to ask you what factors might affect the caregiving experience for men. And I'm thinking of things like, you know, their job or their employment status, or perhaps even their own health status. Could you talk a little bit about the various factors that come into play as men take over the caregiving job?
Yeah, I think that every story is absolutely unique. And you might suspect that a guy who's a stay-at-home dad might struggle less than a guy who doesn't do any of the household physical or emotional work and has a high demand career. But I don't know that that's true. I mean, I've seen both of those kind of people, and they both struggle just as much, and they just have different challenges. So, you know, there are definitely other factors for which I can't really speak to, because the reality is, like, 98% of the people who have engaged with us are not from the BIPOC community. They're white males. And so they come from a particular slice of the world, and they tend to come from privilege and have, you know, there are financial challenges for sure. I think a study showed 42% of families facing cancer blow through their savings within 2 years. So it's not to say there aren't financial challenges. They're just maybe not as intense as someone from a less privileged community. So I just can't, I don't have experience with the communities that are coming at this from, we can only suspect, right?
That, sure.
Yeah, it would be way harder if, I mean, I know I've spent some time in an urban hospital here in Minneapolis, and the breast cancer community social workers who we try to connect with a lot, they place mom coming in for chemotherapy or radiation, and you know, dad's never there. And so why is that? Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he has to work, and he can't, he's in privilege like I was to not clock in, you know, and work from the infusion room on my laptop. He didn't have that luxury, but he certainly cares about his family as much or more than I do. So one can only sort of, you know, gather suspicions around what it's like for them. But I've also heard some of the BIPOC communities may not be as hard because they're so much more family oriented, and they tend to be more engaged in a church community and, you know, live in multi-generational households. So I've heard that too, that some of that's through studies and reading, but maybe the reason we're not being engaged by that community is that they don't really need us.
That's definitely something we need to address, and I really appreciate you bringing that up. The last question I had for you, Kyle, and again, my sincere thanks for the time you've given me today. I truly, truly appreciate it. But I wanted to conclude by asking you what advice you would give men who are coming into being caregivers. They're just perhaps just got the news, you know, and they suddenly find themselves in that position. How can they maintain their personal life while also devoting significant time to caring for their loved one? What advice or insight can you share on that?
It's going to be hard. It's going to feel awkward. You know, you're going to struggle. And to the extent that you can find people who already navigated that terrain and learn from their experience, that you're going to struggle less. But you're still going to struggle. Like, that's just the way that it is. And so I think learning to let go is key. You know, letting go of the things that don't fit in your life anymore, that maybe, you know, if you bowled on Wednesday nights, maybe you don't anymore. And you might find that those people that you bowled with are just another group of people that you have to update. And that maybe is draining you instead of filling you up like it used to. And so learning to let go, learning to appreciate what you're doing, how big caregiving is, you know, knowing in a hospital there are like 12 people caring for a patient at any one time, doctors, nurses, epidemiologists, the people cleaning, you know, there's a whole team. And then when you're at home by yourself doing this, you can't do it alone. Or you can, but you're going to suck at it. And if mediocrity is what you're striving for, then knock yourself out. Go at it alone. But no guy that I've ever met trying to do this is trying to be mediocre. They're all trying to bring excellence to the role. They just need the tools. And then I just say build a team. Let other people be the magic.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.